Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Tomorrow in San Francisco, a group of Boston civic leaders, including Mayor Marty Walsh, will go before the U.S. Olympic Committee in a bid to bring the Olympic Games to Boston in 2024. There are other cities looking to win the committee's backing, including San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles. So this is just the start of a long process. Once the U.S. Committee picks a city next month, the competition moves to the International Olympic Committee, which will announce the host for the 2024 Games 2 years from now. But what would it mean if Boston were to be selected? A beach volleyball court on Boston Common, an Olympic Village at UMass, a stadium maybe in Southie that could sit 80,000 people. Lots of private money, but lots of taxpayer dollars as well. The Games would change Boston forever. Two views now on why the city should bid for the Olympic Games and why it shouldn't. Mike Ross is a former city councilor and a candidate, former candidate for mayor. He writes for the Boston Globe, and he backs the game coming to Boston. He's been on our show a bunch of times. And Mike Ross, good to see you back.
Good to see you. Thanks.
And with us is Chris Dempsey. He's co-chair of No Boston Olympics. And the name of that organization makes it pretty clear how he feels. And Chris Dempsey, welcome to you.
Thanks, Anthony.
Good to have you. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Should Boston host the Olympic Games? Why? Why not? Give us a call. Join the conversation or the debate. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. So, Mike, let's start with you. You published a piece a few months back in the Globe, and I liked your analogy. It was like, you know, when you have a nice dinner party, you fix things up for your guests, right? And it sort of makes the whole house just feel a little bit better. And that was sort of the analogy you used about why Olympics would be good for Boston.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the reasons why I think we want to do this. I'd put three reasons on the table. Let's start with that one. We are badly in need of an infrastructure improvement in Boston. In fact, this is one of the reasons why some people say we should not have the Olympics, because our public roadways and infrastructures aren't ready. This, frankly, will absolutely force us to do what we've needed to do for years and years. We've just seen in the last election that there was the question on the gas tax was defeated. It's only getting harder and harder to fund public infrastructure projects. So this would really force us to do that. Number two, the marketing potential of this is unprecedented. Boston will have a chance to showcase itself around the world, whether we win or not. We'll be able to tell everyone why they should come there. And three, it's the Olympics. This is an epic event that Boston is finally ready to host, where countries come together on playing fields, where athletes compete, where people come together. And while there have been bad examples in Olympics, as there are bad examples in the history of everything, at its best, the Olympics is just an amazing event, amazing set of events that I believe Boston could do at its best.
I'm going to come to you, Chris Dempsey. Obviously, I know you're going to respond to this, but let me just throw sort of one thought back at you, Mike, and that is, you know, Boston is sort of notoriously cautious in a way, and we've had the recent experience of the big dig while, you know, we finally managed to do these tunnels and get out to the airport 3.5 minutes quicker than we could before. The cost overruns were staggering. So I'm just, you know, my guess is a lot of people think about investing in Olympic structures, and they're immediately going to think of cost overruns, the big dig example. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, I give the proponent, the organizers of the Olympics 2024, which I'm not a part of. I'm just here as a citizen responding. I give them credit. They came out early and said, we will not ask the public to pay for this. And more than that, they're willing to write an insurance rider that if there are overruns and they'll pay for this, then those overruns will be captured in cost and not be borne by the public. But I would also just say that regarding the big dig, and this is not a debate on whether that should or should not happen, but the long arc of history will prove that the big dig transformed this city. It reopened the waterfront. It opened up the Innovation District. It changed the shape and face of Boston. And I believe that the Olympics will do the same thing.
Interesting. All right. Well, Chris Dempsey, let's come to you. Respond to some of those points that Mike Ross make. You know, chiefly, it would force the city to do things that it just otherwise hasn't been able to do around housing, around transportation, and just around the glitzy image of this world-class city.
Yeah, well, let me start by saying, you know, I think Mike and I probably agree on 95 or 99% of issues in the city of Boston and in the region. We're both very optimistic about the city. We think that there is a need to invest and there is a need to grow and build. And I remember on the mayoral campaign, Mike said, let's be a city of a million residents. And I think that is a phenomenal idea and an opportunity to dream big and think big. But, you know, the history of Olympics is really a negative one for cities around the world. Economists have found that Olympics do not leave cities better off in terms of economic development or growth than they were before hosting the Games. Olympics are incredibly expensive. The average Olympic Summer Games is $19.2 billion. To put that into context, the city of Boston's budget is $2.7 billion a year. So you're talking about spending three times the city's budget on a 3 to 6 week event. And then finally, Olympics have enormous opportunity costs. So essentially, if we host the Games, for the next 10 years, all of the oxygen is going to get sucked out of the room. And instead of talking about healthcare, instead of talking about education, instead of talking about basic transportation improvements, we're going to be talking about where should we site the stadium? Where should we site the velodrome? How is the Olympic Village going to get built, and is it going to get built on time? And we just think that these are not the questions that the citizens of Boston or Massachusetts have elected their leaders to discuss. They want them focused on far more important, fundamental, day-to-day issues that are a lot less sexy, but ultimately are the things that make our region a great place to live.
And when you're saying fundamental, what are you talking? You're talking about things like housing, infrastructure improvement, public transportation, all that sort
Absolutely.
Of stuff.
And again, we need to think big as a region, but we also need to think smart.
But what about, to Mike's point, that the Olympics, just like bidding for the Olympics, is a road toward thinking about those things and improving those things?
So that's not the history of other cities. And a great example of that would be in Brazil for the World Cup. This was a little covered story, but right before the July 4th holiday, an overpass in Belo Horizonte, Brazil, collapsed. Now, that system, that overpass had been promised as part of a BRT expansion that would connect two parts of the city. It wasn't done on time. And in fact, because the construction was rushed for the Games, it ended up being shoddier than it otherwise would have been. But think about this. You know, when the IOC comes to visit your city in the lead up to the Games, the questions they're asking are not, did you get the subway system built that you promised? Did you build the affordable housing that you promised? The questions they ask are, is the stadium done? Is the velodrome done? How's the roof going on that? You know, is the Olympic Village all set for our athletes to come? They do not care about the day-to-day lives of people in Massachusetts. They care about their 3 to 6 week event and how it looks on television. Hmm. And I don't know why we would want to get in bed with that entity when we should be focused on the day-to-day things that make Massachusetts a great place to live.
So, Mike, speak to that issue. I mean, that the point there that, you know, building these facilities isn't for, you know, everyday working people in Boston.
Well, I mean, the organizing committee of the Olympics coming here may or may not care about the conditions of the citizens of Massachusetts and Boston. But I can tell you that the mayor of the city of Boston, who supports this, and Governor-elect Baker will care about how Boston looks in the eyes of the world when people come here. So as I kind of analogized people coming to your dining room over for a big dinner, you want to make sure when they come there that people in your household are happy and well cared for. And, you know, when people are going to come to our city, I think we're going to be under more pressure to demonstrate that we treat our citizens fairly, that people are getting a fair wage, that healthcare is prevalent everywhere in Massachusetts and in Boston. Those are the kinds of things that people are going to demand. The other, I think, fault with the argument that my friend Chris is making is he's almost presuming that we in Massachusetts and we in Boston can't do two things at once. We can't plan an Olympics and also, you know, build great infrastructure or build world-class universities or hospitals. And I just reject that. I don't believe that. We've had an opportunity to bring world-class big events to our city, most namely the Boston Marathon, and we do it well. We do it well during crisis, and we do it well when there isn't crisis. And I think that we can do the Olympics well by bringing it here, as well as doing other things that we do well on every single regular basis.
I take your point about the marathon, but boy, I mean, the marathon, of course, a big event, but it's one day, one event, really just lasts a few hours. I mean, we're talking about something that is so much bigger citywide that will last, you know, days and days.
And we're finally ready for that.
Yeah.
You know, but if you had to put the marathon through the same kind of scrutiny and test that Chris would want the Olympics to go through, polling citizens, asking residents if this is something that they want. I mean, a lot of these ideas would just get killed in the crib. But one of the problems with Boston is we punish success. We sometimes aren't as bold as we can be. The Globe had a great editorial about how we don't brag enough about who we are and what we are. And I think it's time that
it's not in our DNA. Apparently.
It's not who we are. And I think this is an opportunity for us to do that and to do it well.
Anthony, the historical record just does not bear that out. I mean, look at what was announced last week with Hub Week. It's an absolutely great opportunity to show the world who we are. It's going to be Boston's equivalent of South by Southwest. It's going to happen every year. It's going to happen in a sustainable way. It's going to pull in great resources from biotech and innovation in the universities. I mean, that is a phenomenal opportunity for us to show our city to the world. We don't need to build a stadium and a velodrome to make that happen. And it's not that we can't do multiple things at once in this city or in this region. It's a question around priorities. You know, Mike worked in government, as did I, and one thing that's sort of a common thing you hear in government is pick three things and do those things really well. If we move ahead with an Olympic bid, then one of those three things for every elected leader between now and 2024 becomes the Olympics. And so maybe that person wanted to pick healthcare, education, and affordable housing, and they're going to have to knock one of those three things off the list and replace it with Olympics.
Except,
and that's just not a priority for the people of Massachusetts. Frankly, this has been a very much a top-down effort. There's been zero public meetings in more than a year that Boston 2024 has existed. And Mike's exactly right. If you polled the people of Massachusetts and Boston and you asked, where does hosting an Olympics appear on your list of priorities? It'd be way to the bottom because they want better education, they want lower cost healthcare, lower cost energy, more jobs, and an Olympics accomplishes none of those things.
But, can I just correct something for the record?
Ahead,
first of all, there's a misstatement on the table here. There have been public meetings. There have been hearings in front of the democratically elected state legislature, seven in all, where people attended, spoke, testified, and discussed whether or not it made sense to move forward on the Olympics, number one. Number two, it's not just going to be someone in government who's handling the Olympics. There is a private group that has agreed to insulate the public from public cost overrun, led by John Fish, who is one of the more competent business leaders in the region, if not the United States, who's agreed to take this on. And I think that's an excellent use of his time and his resources. And I'm glad we have citizens like that who want to step up and do that. So it's not going to be someone in some office who's running the Olympics and not able to attend to the rising crime rate or some struggles in our Boston public schools, for example. Those are well in place. We have citizens who have stepped up and who are trying to do this with public input.
Well, let me just ask Chris about that, because, Chris, I mean, as we mentioned in the introduction, we really are sort of in the early, early stages. I mean, of course, the U.S. Olympic Committee has to make their consideration. If Boston does get selected, then we go through this long process where we're up against, Paris, Istanbul, a whole bunch of other cities. I mean, isn't there going to be ample time for the public input and for this debate that we're having here to sort of play itself out over time?
Yeah, so the question is, why say no now? Why not just sort of let it get through the USOC process? And the reason why is because when you get to the USOC level, you become the sole bid for the US. And when that happens, all of these national interests, whose interests aren't having the games in the U.S., start to come into play.
Right.
So if you're Nike or you're NBC or McDonald's, you make more money if the games are in the U.S. And all of a sudden, it's worth you investing a couple million bucks or 10 million bucks in the debate in Massachusetts. And so the conversation really goes beyond our borders and no longer is our people talking to each other and our voters talking to each other. It's a conversation that plays out in boardrooms around the country and around the world. And we really get sort of left out in that. Now, to Mike's point about the public hearings that occurred between October 2013 and January 2014, that was a feasibility study that asked the questions, could Boston host the Games? Not should Boston host the Games. And we agree that Boston could host a very successful Games. We just think it's not the right priority. You know, an interesting note about the composition of that committee, there were two independent economists, one at Smith College and one at Holy Cross University, that asked to be put onto that commission. And their life's work is studying mega events and sporting events. And they never heard back from the people that were putting the committee together. Instead, it was stacked with Statehouse insiders, folks from the construction industry, and folks from the tourism industry. So it was not an independent panel. It was one where the outcome was essentially prejudged that it was going to be a positive study. And since then, we've never asked the question, should we follow through with this bid?
All right. Well, that's one of the things we're able to do right here. Listeners, what do you think? We've got Mike Ross here, former city councilor, Boston Globe contributor, and Chris Dempsey, who was just talking then. He's co-chair of No Boston Olympics. Let us know what you think. 1-800 423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got a bunch of callers on the line, so let's just take them in the order that they have called. Tom is calling from Pittsfield. Tom, what do you think?
Hi. Well, I went to the Vancouver Winter Olympics in 2010 and had a lot of friends out there. And while I know there were certain costs that the province had to bear, certain facilities were built and the transportation systems that went to them still benefit everybody 4 years later, like the Richmond Olympic Oval that was put in a economically depressed part of the metropolitan area. They had to extend the rail line to it and other systems, and people are using that rail line every single day. I have friends that now use that every day instead of having to drive into the city center.
So, Tom, I'm going to cut to the chase only because I want to get to some other calls, but it sounds like a vote in favor that this kind of infrastructure upgrade has some lasting effects, as you saw in Vancouver. Fair
enough?
Definitely. All right. Good. Thanks, Tom. We're going to put that on the table and come back to it. Let's go to Alberto, who's calling from Waltham. Alberto, you're on the air.
Well, I think it's cowardly to have to hide all that infrastructure long-term plan with the Olympics and justify it that way. Why don't the politicians develop the guts to present to the people a long-term plan of build-up for the city of Boston, where we have great schools, where we have better infrastructure, where we have great bridges, and we present it to the people, not hide it through the Olympics. The other question is, why don't we look at the dealings of the International Olympic Committee, which has been a shady operation many times with numerous issues regarding to it, and why don't we take a look at the what happened in Utah with the Olympics, where the federal government and the state government had to step in once the Olympics were in way and had to bail them out. That's how Mitt Romney became successful running those Olympics. What's going to happen is that once we're in the process, and there are going to be some cost overrun, it's going to have to happen what happened with the big dig.
All right.
The state is going to have to pony up.
Alberto, you've expressed some concerns really well, so let me turn to Mike Ross and Chris Dempsey. And let's start with the gentleman who called about Vancouver. And Chris, I'll put this to you, because not all the examples of Olympics around the world have been terrible. I was reading before this show that London and Barcelona have used the games to revitalize neglected neighborhoods. We heard an example there about Vancouver making transportation upgrades that are still appreciated by citizens.
Yeah. I mean, Anthony, I think the record is not great in London. The games there cost three times the original budget that was proposed. But look, you know, I ride the T every single day. I've already been on the D line, the B line, and the Orange line today. And there's no one that wants public infrastructure investments and public transportation more than I do. The question is, should our society really be moving forward with this bank shot, to use a basketball analogy? Because we can't do the stuff we should do, we're going to force ourselves to get in bed with the IOC and make ourselves do that. The question then becomes, let's say you do that, what happens after the games come? Then are you even worse off than you were before, because you've told yourself as a society you can only do this stuff if you force yourselves to do it? Why don't we actually, you know, improve our democratic process and improve our process of project creation and planning, so that we end up with the projects we really want as a society without all of the waste and extra building that comes with an Olympics?
And Mike Ross, that was our second caller, Alberto's point. You know, why not come up with an open, democratically arrived at plan for improving infrastructure in the city and not get into bed with the IOC, which, you know, may have some unsavory aspects to it?
Well, I he's talking about political courage. And both the voters and even last year, the legislature chose not to support a bold transportation infrastructure bond bill when, you know, the one that was originally proposed by Deval Patrick. Those were just in the last couple of years. But my question would be, why don't we do both? Why don't we have the Olympics, use it as a catalyst to make us kind of do the things we know we have to do, and then enjoy the benefits of having the Olympics in Boston, marketing our name across the world, and also enjoying what is the Olympics? These other cities in America had cash flow positive. LA is now trying to get its third Olympics. Do you think the people of LA would be on trying to get number three if it was a failure for round one and round two? You have LA, Atlanta, Salt Lake City, Lake Placid, Barcelona. These are all examples of cash flow positive Olympics that were successful. And, you know, Aldoberto mentioned Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney ran a presidential campaign pointing to his successful execution of an Olympics. You know, yes, turning it around because there were problems, but nonetheless successful. So there are many examples of where you can find success. And you don't just do something because don't not do something because there might be a risk of failure.
All right. Let's go to Matthew, who is calling from Medford. Matthew, you're on the air.
Call. I just wanted to point out, I think I heard London being used as an example of a positive development from the Olympics. But I mean, in the aftermath of the London Olympics, the government issued a report that said it was financially positive, which was pretty much universally derided as a big scam to save face. And I just don't think we want to put ourselves in that same place. I know your guest talked about having private insurance to help, you know, in the case of cost overruns. But when push comes to shove, once you get in bed with something like the Olympics, it becomes essentially too big to fail. I have no faith whatsoever that we're not going to be sucked into paying for implementation failures, big dig type problems for infrastructure we don't even really need. What are we going to do with all these sporting, you know, venues that we wind up with after the fact?
All right, Matthew, we get your point. Thanks for the call. We're going to put that on the table, but let me move on just for the moment to Dean, who's calling from Fitchburg. I want to get as many callers in as possible. Dean, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm in Fitchburg. I actually grew up in Montreal in the shadow of the 72 Olympics. And I'm wondering, why is it in Boston that every time there's an opportunity for us to bring places where business can come, where entertainment can come, we always fall back and try not to do it? I remember the Democratic National Convention, they had to extend the hours of the bars and the clubs because we don't traditionally open too late. It seems like we're against any kind of business coming in, and we're stopping money from getting in, and we're always struggling to do something to bring more when things are right in our laps.
All right, Dean, thanks for that question. Chris, that sounds like a good question for you to take. And I am just going to remark here, it's interesting the way these calls are coming in. This is exactly the way the way they're coming in. It's like four against. Anyway, Chris, respond to Dean's idea that, come on, let's not be chickens about this.
The idea that the Olympics improve economic outcomes for cities is just not true. And you won't find economists that say that, because there's no evidence that that's the case. Here's what the New York Times said this summer. There is strikingly little evidence that Olympics increase tourism or draw new investment. Britain received about 5% fewer foreign visitors in August 2012 than it did in the same month the previous year. What you see is that Olympics essentially displace economic activity that would otherwise occur. So hotels in the Boston area are already over 90% capacity in the summer months. That means that that visitors will come for the Olympics, but the ones that would have come to visit the MFA, that would have come to go on a whale watch, that would have come to enjoy our history, will stay away and they'll go to Philadelphia or New York or Toronto instead, because they're going to think of the Olympics as being chaos and something that they just don't want to be associated with. There's just no evidence that Olympics leave cities better off economically.
All right. We're just about out of time, but Mike, I feel like I got to give you a chance to just respond to that last point, the sort of history of Olympics, and there not being any evidence that they help.
I guess I would say that, you know, Boston is so much more than a city of whale watching. And I think it's time we started to act like it. And so to be prepared for 2024, we're going to have to build hotels. We're going to have to build infrastructure. We're going to have to be ready for such a large, enormous event. But isn't that good? Isn't that, to the caller's point, what we want to do to create jobs, revenue, and economic development?
All right, folks. Well, obviously, this debate is going to continue for some time, and we really appreciate Mike Ross, former city councilor, Boston Globe contributor, for coming in, as well as Chris Dempsey, co-chair of No Boston Olympics. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in and hashing out this discussion and debate so interestingly and in such a civilized way. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks.
And listeners, you can continue this conversation, this debate, on RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, the story of the MFA's most controversial acquisition, the Boston Raphael. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.